All right, this is section 3 for Computer Science E259, the focus of which is on Project 2. So let's dive in and get a sense of exactly what's in store for you with this project and what its aims are. So if you have looked over the distribution code as well as the spec itself, you'll notice that the project has three main components in increasing order of complexity and hopefully fun. The first component, it's B2B time, essentially is an exercise in XSLT to acclimate you to some of the syntax and to use it for a fairly bite-sized task of converting one date-time format into another, the former of which is not an XML, the latter of which is an XML. The aim of that problem really is just to acclimate you to some of the XSLT functions and XPath functions, particularly those related to strings, so that you simply get a sense for how the languages themselves work. The second component of this project is called My Blockbuster, and this is a step toward a more interesting deployment of XSLT. Specifically, you're given a small-sized database of information about movies that we took a look at in the most recent lecture, and you're given a template of an XSL file. These files are then myblockbuster.xml and myblockbuster.xsl. The ultimate idea is that you will be applying your XSL file to this XML file in order to generate an XHTML output for the user that simply reports what movies, actors, and ratings and such are in this particular database. Finally, XTube, which is the end game of this project, is the largest of the three tasks and hopefully the most fun and engaging. You're given in this task a much larger file of probably a couple of hundred kilobytes, and in this file is all of the information on London's tubes, trains, and trams within zones 1 through 6, including their names, their stations, their lines, their colors, their logos, their geographic coordinates, and a number of other details as well. The challenge of this part of the project is to have you craft an XSLT style sheet that generates either SVG or XHTML based on its parameterization, and the XHTML output is meant to be a single web page that's interactive insofar as it will use fragment IDs and hyperlinks within the page, and it's meant to be your opportunity with a client-side approach to present the user with a dynamically generated web page that allows them to answer questions like, if I am at station X, how can I get to station Y? Or if I'm at station X, to which other stations can I get, to which other lines can I transfer? Works of art and cleverness, including those that use cascading style sheets and JavaScript, are certainly encouraged, but the project itself lays out exactly what the true expectations are of the problem. The second part of XTube tasks you with deploying SVG, scalable vector graphics, so that you output not an XHTML version of that data, but a graphical version written in SVG. More on this in a couple of weeks' time. This is the part of the project that you're by no means expected to dive into just yet, unless you have a particular interest in diving ahead. But certainly at this point, after the most recent lecture on XSLT, you should be able to take a stab over the next several days and weeks at its B2B time and My Blockbuster. And even though in the upcoming lecture we will highlight some additional features and such of XSLT, you definitely do have the basics with which to tackle much of the project at this point. So why don't we take a spin through the PDF just so that you have a sense of exactly what you could or should bite off and how to do so. And then finally, I'll walk you through some of the code that is included with this distribution. With that said, you will notice that the appendix for this project is even larger than the last. Many of these steps, though, you already did if you worked on your own machine in Project 1, and those are noted accordingly. And realize, too, that the purpose in giving you these appendices with the project is manifold. One, it's certainly meant to be a convenience so that you're not confined to a nice .fas environment. Two, it's meant to be really a hand-holding introduction to exactly what you would need to do after E259 to actually get this kind of software, these kinds of tools, these kinds of languages up and running on your own system. Because I think it would be a disservice by us if we handed you everything, say in the form of nice.fas, but at course's end you really didn't have a good sense and a good familiarity with how you yourself could go and deploy these solutions in your own environment. So these steps are numerous for the reason that they perfectly document exactly how nice is configured, and you should be able to configure your machine as well. Certainly turn to me or to the listserv if you have questions about your environment over the next few days. With that said, let's jump over to page 3 of the PDF for Project 2 specification. The first several questions, as before, simply get you started by having you download the code or install it, and also to confirm that your environment is perfectly set up, either on NICE or perhaps on your own machine. The quickies section, which begins on page 4, is meant to be just a conceptual reinforcement of some of the material we've been looking at, but I will caution, now that we've not yet gotten to XSLFO, that you can turn a blind eye to the quickies mention of using XSLFO. In short, what this part of the project, short as it is, tasks you with doing is to answer a number of questions, which as of this point you can largely answer on paper pencil, and then it asks you to write those answers up in the form of an XML file, formatted however you see fit, and supplemented by an XSL file that in 2 weeks' time will be your opportunity to write a quick and dirty XSL file that will output what's called XSLFO, Extensible Style Sheet Language Formatting Objects, which will output a PDF of the answers that were otherwise represented in your XML file. In short, you can proceed to answer these quickies now, if only on paper pencil, but don't worry for a week or two about how to mark them up in the XML and XSL and XSLFO manner prescribed. Numbers 3 asks you about some XPath expressions. Number 4 similarly asks you about the same. We'll cover some of these details or reiterate them this coming week, but you can certainly turn to online references and such, particularly those linked on the website, for a bit of bootstrapping on some of the topics here that you might not be as familiar, though we did cover them at least verbally in class, like these other axes like ancestor and preceding. With that said, that brings us to number 5, which is the B2B time question. And as you can see in the middle of this page, the idea is that you will be handed, by way of an XSL parameter, a string in a particular ISO format that represents a date and time, and time zone and such. And your task, quite simply, will be to write a style sheet. It will probably only take a dozen or two lines to use, presumably, substring matching of some sort to output a standardized XML fragment that represents the same. XSLT, realize, is not all about string matching, certainly with the limited functions that XSLT 1 and XPath 1 offer, but again, this per the introduction to this section, that B2B component is meant to just acclimate you to the environment and to the steps involved in writing an XSLT in something that's very bite-sized and you can accomplish fairly quickly. That brings us to the more interesting part of the project, which is my blockbuster. On this same page as problem 6, notice that you are given the command that you can type for both B2B time and future work with XSL if you use Xalen as a command line utility. Xalen, recall, is the XSLT processor that the Apache group distributes, currently supports XSLT and XPath 1. You can use it both at the command line, as we've prescribed, and if you look through the appendix, you'll see that Xalen itself is not a binary, but rather it's an alias to a particular main routine in one of the class files provided by Apache. Xalen is also a Java library, so in projects 3 and 4, we will continue using Xalen, albeit not at the command prompt, but rather by way of some API call. So more on that to come. Well, my blockbuster, again, as you saw in class, since we drew many of our examples from this same flat file, you're given myblockbuster.xml, which is a small database, if you will, containing information on movies and actors. You're given in this project myblockbuster.xsl as well, and you are tasked in this problem with implementing a style sheet that generates a web page like that depicted on page 8 of the PDF. Essentially, it too uses fragment IDs to allow a user to jump around in the file and see what movies Tom Herman is in, what movies are rated R, and so forth. Really, this is meant to be your opportunity to take some of the ideas from the most recent lecture out for a spin on your own and to have a fairly small task that is larger in complexity and interest than the B2B time, but at the end of the day, it's a fairly simple manipulation and is meant to give you a chance to get quite comfortable with XSLT before proceeding to X2. And that is to say, this project is very much meant to be tackled linearly, starting with the B2B time to my blockbuster to X2, skipping, of course, things like the FO stuff that we will get to next week. All right? Mind the gap. is the next and final part of the project. Fortunately, 7, long as it is a zero-point question that really just gives you some background information. Do take some time to understand before you dive in head first into this part of the project exactly what you've been given in the way of XML. The file is large, huge compared to the files we've looked at thus far, but realize that it's incredibly redundantly structured. And that is to say, even though there's a lot of data in there, what it is a lot of line elements and a lot of station elements, all of which share a common structure. And so if you understand one such structure, you'll understand the entire file, though there are many instances thereof. Notice on page 10, I give you a fragment of the line section of the file. You'll see here is a depiction of what's known as the Bakerloo. We have the Bakerloo line. You're given its color and a hexadecimal code. It's a type tube. You're given the name of its logo that we've provided you with and the URL of its official website. Pretty self-explanatory, and worthy of note perhaps is that each line, as Bakerloo does here, has its own unique line ID, and that's used later in the file to specify what stations are on what lines. Implicitly by way of their neighbors. Next, on page 11, you'll see a larger fragment, this time drawn from one of the station elements, this being the station of Sloan Square. It, too, has its own unique ID. Up top under coordinates, you have not only geographical coordinates in the form of what are called Eastings and Northings. So look to the project for their definition. You also have pixel locations in the element called GIF, and this is so that one, for the SVG portion of the project, you can actually depict the stations in a geographically consistent way within your SVG graphic. And you can also, in the XHTML part of the X2 portion of the project, you can actually link the user or display to the user a little GIF that depicts where the station is. And look to the project for how you figure out where on these GIFs a particular station is. But we also give you the geographic coordinates, the Eastings and Northings, so you can also link to an external wonderful website known as streetmap.co.uk, which takes as inputs Eastings and Northings and some other formats as well, and lets you present the user with some geographic locations. And again, for those of you coming in with savvy with CSS and JavaScript and so forth, I would absolutely encourage you to tackle some really neat interfaces, if you will. We intentionally in this course don't show you past students' implementations of this project, nor do I show you what my vision of the same would be, since this project, more than others in particular, we hope to foster a good deal of creativity. Certainly time permitting, only feel that you need to satisfy the project's expectations officially, but certainly if you'd like to do some neat things with JavaScript and some use of iframes and so forth so that you can actually embed, for instance, the maps within the page, by all means, we'd love to demo it then in a couple of weeks' time for the class to see anonymously, if you wish. Notice that finally, a station element has a whole bunch of neighbor children, and these indicate exactly what station you can reach in one hop from a given station and on what line you can do so. So per a recent listserv post, what you will notice is that implicit in these neighbors is an implication as to what line this station itself is on. So Sloan Square, by implication here, is on not only line 3, because it connects to some station known as 99 via it, but it's also on line 4. So bear that in mind as well. And as per one of the last questions in the project about writing your own converter file to make this a more effective representation of the data, realize that there's relatively little, if any, redundancy of actual data in this file. But as you'll probably appreciate over the next couple of weeks, sometimes storing things in the most space-efficient way in, say, XML isn't necessarily the most conducive to development time. And so what you'll begin to appreciate with this project is that representing data as XML is itself a potential design decision. It's not necessarily a no-brainer where you slap some metadata around your actual data and assume that you'll deal with the representation later. It, as with many things in development, is a potential trade-off between development time and execution time and design time. So, scrolling ahead, question 8 explains exactly what you're asked to do in terms of the XHTML portion of the project. Question 9 explains what is expected with the SVG portion of the project. And of course, since we haven't gotten to SVG yet, you can certainly turn a blind eye to that section for now. Notice that throughout this project, for instance, on page 14, There are mentions of using Ant. Just like with Project 1, we'll be using Ant as a build tool, although we won't so much be building code as we were with Java C last time, but rather we will be transforming code, that is applying style sheets to XML files. And so if you look through the build.xml file with which you've been provided, in there effectively are some shortcuts to the application of Xalin to the various XML and XSL files throughout this project. And you can certainly add tasks to that build file if you would like. It's meant to simply save you a few keystrokes, although you will realize that the task names are themselves fairly long, so feel free to modify as you see fit, so long as you keep the original tasks in place as you proceed. Finally, number 10 explains how you can go, tasks you with considering how you might go about reformatting the data. And finally, 11 tasks you with submitting the project. And again, the project concludes with a walkthrough appendix of exactly how you might set up your own machine if you wish to develop on your own machine. I can't emphasize enough that though these tools in particular are somewhat PC biased, using a tool like Stylus or Stylus or XML Spy or an equivalent on another platform really can be a wonderful educational tool as well as a wonderful time saver. As you saw in lecture, the mere existence of those contextual menus that pop up and spoon feed you the answers as to what attributes a certain XSL element takes is wonderful, not only to save you keystrokes, but because as you're learning this stuff, simply being prompted with the options visually is a great way to reinforce and to acquaint you with exactly what you can do with these elements. A wonderful website, meanwhile, to keep open in another window throughout this project is one of those linked on the course website's resources page. Again, everything here is categorized by language or technology or such. If you jump down to the XSLT portion, there's a bunch of links for this one, a number of which are tutorials, which are meant to supplement what we talk about in section and what's taught implicitly in the projects, in addition to the recommendations themselves. But any of these tutorials, not just for XSL, but anywhere on this resources page, I personally am a big fan of the W3 Schools websites. They, for instance, have a W3 Schools XSL tutorial, to which we've linked. I will say that they are a bit weak on provision of examples. They often have example code, but it's terribly short, terribly simple examples sometimes, but as a reference, seeing what functions exist, what XSLT elements exist, attributes are valid, it really is wonderful. And the printed equivalent, if not more exhaustive version of the same kind of content, would be Michael Kay's book. And again, I caution that because we'll be focusing more on XSLT1, just so that we don't lead you astray such that by term's end you're assuming that there will exist in your own environments features of XSL that are really just features of XSLT2, you might want to try to pick up via Amazon or the like the first edition of his book, which was for XSLT 1.0, though for the most part you will find that most everything we do this semester will still apply to XSLT2. And next week we'll take a glimpse at some of the changes that you can be mindful of. But the concern really isn't so much for our purposes the differences in the languages, but just really right now the lack of support for the more recently ratified version of XSLT and XPath. Saxon, recall, it is a complete implementation of XSLT2, but Apache, last time I checked, had yet to announce official plans to support XSLT2. But again, the specs just came out in recommendation form on January 23, so time shall tell. With that said, do feel free to make use of the listserv if you have any questions about what's in the PDF. And why don't we go ahead and conclude here with just a walkthrough of some of the source code. So what I've done is just opened a window to my Project 2 directory. And you'll notice there's the three directories we've discussed, B2B, my Blockbuster, Xtube, as well as the build file. Each of these is fairly self-explanatory if you just poke around. Worthy of note with the B2B directory is that there's just one file there, and then as per the spec for this project, you'll notice that we're just having you run Xalin at the command line with the parameter attribute. And you can pass parameters in Stylus and XML Spy via various GUI features of the same, but the simplest way perhaps for B2B time is just to run it at a command line either on Yearbox or on Nice. If you go into the My Blockbuster directory, you'll notice categorically organized subdirectories for GIFs, JPEGs, XHTML, XML, and XSL. Take a look again at those files, but you're probably already somewhat familiar, if not comfortable, with the XML and XSL files since we use them in class. Finally, Xtube has a bunch of directories, one of the most useful of which will be that PDF directory, which is also linked on the course's website via its maps links. Making use of the maps for this project technically isn't necessary or required, but just having a visual to reference, not just for the SVG part of the project, but really for the coding of your XSLT and your understanding of the xtube.xml file, it really is just wonderful to be able to visually check, does in fact Sloan Square connect to stations X and Y, or is my code wrong? So you can help do sanity checks on your own implementation by trying to corroborate your answers with the facts that are in the maps themselves. Control F will be your friend. There are so many darn stations on those maps that, provided you use a PDF reader that can do so, if you search through the file, the text itself, the labels of the stations and lines should be searchable by a Control F or equivalent. So that should help bring your you focus your eyes on the stations in question. With that said, that pretty much wraps up our verbal overview of both the code and the PDF. Again, make use of the listserv or email to me if you have any questions. Otherwise, I do hope you have fun with this project. It's perhaps my personal favorite, though I suspect I'll say that for projects 3 and 4 as well, for the sake of motivating. But it is fun, and do bear in mind that the maps and such are also available for you on the web so that you can easily pull them up. Good luck with project 2, and we'll see you in about a week.